Welcome, everybody. We're at Breakfast with Bob, Boston Edition. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're presented, hosted by Highlands. Stop your cramp, not your race. And by Polar, chase your destiny. Our next guest, three-time Olympian. He holds the fastest Ironman time in history. Please give it up for Mr. Tim Don.
Wow.
A studio audience.
I love it.
We've got an audience. Tim, how is that? So the last time we chatted was, I think, the day before your crash. So when I look at last year, I think of it as a tale of two cities. Here you are early in the year doing the fastest Ironman in history in Ironman Brazil. And then 3 days before Kona, the world championship, when you are ready to win that race, you got hit by a car and broke your neck. Take me through what happened that day.
Well, I mean, woke up, had a great breakfast. No, actually, I went swimming, swam out to the coffee boat. Everything's all peachy. Had my last kind of like hit out. I was rolling out past the airport, and that's where I was going to start my session. And at the gas station, I was in the cycle lane. A car came towards me, turned in front and T-boned me. 20 minutes later, I woke up and the guys were carrying me off the road. Then I kind of dazed in and out of consciousness for about an hour. Had some x-rays, MRI, CAT scan, MRI with contrast, and they told me I broke my neck. They mobilized it. They said, you know, we don't want to do anything here because you could be stuck here for quite, I would have had to have gone to Honolulu because that's the bigger hospital.
Right.
So they said, instead of flying there, you might as well fly home. Flew home, believe it or not, that was Thursday. That was Wednesday, flew home Thursday. Landed on Friday the 13th, and I got three options, and the doctor said that the best option for me going forward to pursue a professional career was to have four screws screwed into my head and have a halo on.
What were the other options?
One was to have my vertebrae fused, C1 and C2, which is what most people opt with, but you lose 50% of your mobility.
Yes.
I mean, it's coming back slowly, but yeah, literally you'd lose 50%, and obviously swimming, just general life, and that also puts a lot of stress on your lower vertebrae.
Sure.
And there's a very good chance I'd have to have those fused later on in life. The other option was just an Aspen collar, a C collar, which again holds it still, but you can move. And he said, obviously, you know, with that fracture, you want it to heal perfectly. And he was really worried about the curvature of my spine and the gaps between my vertebrae. Well, I mean, the halo is a plaster cast for your neck, basically, where they screw two bolts in here and here. And then I've got these poles, and then the brace comes right down to my belly button. And I had to wear that for 3 months.
3 months?
Yeah.
And a lot of people who put a halo on go out of their mind in the first 3 minutes.
It took me a bit longer, but by day three, I was. My wife had to hold me back to go in the garage and get an Allen key and unscrew it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. My body doesn't deal well with pain meds, but I obviously needed them, and I was throwing up. And if you think when you throw up, you have this.
Oh, you're moving your neck.
But you could not. You physically can't move it. So as I throw up, just the screws, I can feel them going more in, and then they started swelling up, and they were oozing, and yeah, just. It's not pleasant, let me put it that way.
Did they have to adjust the screws over time?
Unfortunately, after about 3 weeks, you know, the neck was not so sure. My shoulder was damaged. That was okay, my right leg. And I started to do a little bit of training, and obviously there's that slight movement. So unfortunately, four times I had to have the screws retightened, and then...
And they know they have to be careful about, I mean, you go, it's not, there's a finite amount of skull there.
Well, it's funny you should say that. So in early December, I actually had to have a CAT scan, not on my neck, but on my screws, because the screw here, they tightened it so much they were worried it was going to puncture my skull, and it was quite close, so I had to have a fifth screw. So that's why I've got two little scars there. So, and they're literally just doing it like a dentist under local. And when you tighten up your mountain bike seat post, you're tightened up to 4, maybe 5 Newton meters. I had to get them tightened to 8. So it's like pretty legit. Like,
yeah, my God.
You can feel the skin grabbing it and stuff. But
what's always interesting is for somebody who lives as an athlete, works out every day, the endorphins, all that. You need that, right? Were you going, not being able to work out at all? And how did you sleep?
Not much. Well, the first 3 weeks I slept in a chair, bolt upright, as I am now, because even if I put pressure on my brace and my halo and my lower back, it would move the tension, so it was very uncomfortable. But the first 3 weeks, you're dealing with, you know, just going from such a high to such a low with your family that you, I mean, pain's, I wouldn't say irrelevant, but that's very secondary. It's just trying to process what happened and how it happened, and first of all, how lucky I was that I'm here, that I can walk, but also how it has affected my life. And then I think after about 3 or 4 weeks, the visitors, you know, stop coming as frequently.
They're all there the first week.
Absolutely. Oh, which is, you know.
Which is great. You love it.
Yeah.
You need it.
And I think that's when reality really set in, you know, the uphill task of just day to day, not being, had to have a, I couldn't shower, I couldn't dress myself. You know, having the, under here got very sweaty and so forth.
Sure, yeah.
So we had to undo it, and it's a very long process and painful process of getting it cleaned. And yeah, it was definitely, it was a tough time, a dark time, I guess.
What was the lowest point?
You know, I think looking back, there were probably two real low points. It was kind of like once I landed in Boulder, so the first, like, I guess 3 days, you know, just the whirlwind of events, going from believing I can fight for a podium at Kona to am I going to be able to walk again, and the effect it had on my life, and just the spiral. You know, you always go through what if I puncture, what if I, you know, have a niggle, but you never go through what if I break my neck and have to wear a halo. And that was really tough, and especially for my wife, you know, having to deal with me being a pain in the bum.
Well, she's got kids to take it now. You're the most demanding kid she's got.
Yeah, totally. Then I think it was kind of like 3 or 4 weeks in when, you know, it's painful, but not crazy painful. And it's like, wow, you know, the high of Kona's, you know, everyone's race. Now everyone, you know, on the social media is looking for their next race. And I'm still stuck there going, well, can I race again? Can I race? If I can race again, what level can I race again?
Sure.
What am I going to do for the rest of my life? How am I going to fulfill this massive hole that's there? My job, etc., etc. Support my family. So, yeah, there were definitely they were tough times, and I was very lucky that, see, my immediate support network, my wife, my family, my friends, all my coaches, my sponsors, my management. You know, they were amazing. You know, they went above and beyond what is written in the contracts and so forth. And you know, I'm very thankful for that. And then I think the greater reach, the community, I was blown away, you know, how much the triathlon community got behind me from near and far. Yep. With messages of support. And yeah, I mean, it's hard to put it into words, but it really meant a lot to myself and my family. Absolutely.
So I know there was a point where all of a sudden you start working out again, you go into the gym, and people are like, Tim, you're so inspirational. I'm so motivated. Did that surprise you?
It did, because, I mean, what was I supposed to do? Just like sit in a dark room, drinking Jack Daniels and, you know, watching Netflix 24 hours a day, you know. I mean, maybe I should have given that a go for a week.
No. At least a week would be nice, yeah.
But no, I mean, you know, they got to a point about 4 weeks when I said, well, let's make the best of this. I'm fed up of doing nothing. I'm going to try and sit on the exercise bike. I think it was 5 minutes at about 60 watts. And
yes.
It felt like a big win. And, you know, my physio had flown over from England to, you know, see what we could do. And we decided, you know, we can't do much with my neck and upper body, so let's make the rest of the body as bulletproof as possible. Let's work on unrelated injuries that, if I do want to get back, when I get back, might occur. I haven't run for 4 months. I've never taken that much time. Let's make the calf strong, the hamstrings strong. Try and make the shoulders strong so I don't get tendonitis when I start to build up my swim. So for me, that was my project, my goal, my focus. And it was cool when I look back that people were saying, you know, that I was inspirational. But to be honest, I was just trying to survive day to day, and for me that was my release. That was me trying
to get
it done.
That was your therapy.
Absolutely.
You needed it.
Oh yeah.
Your wife needed it.
Definitely. My wife needed me to need it.
right.
Just to and I think that was a big turning point about a month in, realizing, okay, well, I can do something for the next 2 months with the halo on, but we'll still take it day by day, week by week, you know, and here we are.
So with the kids, how did they handle it?
You know, kids are so resilient. They really are. I mean, Hugo's 3, Matilda's 7. And I think the one thing they were annoyed about is we couldn't play rough at bath time, and, you know, I couldn't lift them up and whatnot. But yeah, you know, I think it was harder for Kelly and myself, the frustration of not being able to be involved in that kind of physical part of their life, and at that age they're so physical.
Sure.
But for them it was like, oh, can we hang Christmas lights on at Christmas, and oh, daddy's got, can I use that as a climbing frame for my Barbie afterwards? And you know, it's amazing the things that they, you know, how they think. So they were pretty amazing for it. Yeah.
So what have the doctors told you that you can do moving forward?
So I got not written off by the doctors, but I got kind of signed off about five weeks ago. No more scans. There's no visible fracture line, which is brilliant from the radiologists. The gaps in my vertebrae, the spaces, the curvature, they were happy. Now it's a kind of case of how much I can take in terms of the physical side of running, biking and swimming, but also the pain in the neck. I mean, I've been getting physio 3 times a week. One session I blacked out because it's such an intense area where they're just trying to move all the joints. We're trying to break down the scar tissue. There's lots of nerves that pass through there. So we're really, you know, that's been, I've had lots of sciatica. So now it's how much do I want it and how much am I willing to do? And I'm going all the way.
How has this changed you? How is Tim Don different today than you were before this accident?
I think I'm a bit like Zoolander. I've been a bit of an ambi turner. I can only turn left. I can't turn right at the moment.
I love a Zoolander reference. There we go.
You're my bad side. That's literally as far as I can turn. But no, I mean, I think in a day-to-day life, I'm still who I am. But I think in the grander scheme of things, I guess, yeah, it has changed me. I don't take things for granted as much.
Right.
You know, it's made me look back and be thankful of my 21-year professional career and how lucky I've this is the first time I've been hit by a car, and I've ridden thousands of miles. I really have. I've fallen off, broken bones, etc., but never been struck by a vehicle. So I'm thankful for that. But I'm just going to make the most of the rest of my career and try and get back there. And as corny as it sounds, live each day as it comes with the terms of my job and be thankful that I can make a living being a triathlete. I mean, come on.
Right, yeah, I know.
That's pretty cool.
Whoever thought that when you first got into this?
Oh, definitely not me. Definitely not my parents. They wanted me to go to university, get a proper job, and I am as a 40-year-old talking to you.
And I remember we talked about this a while ago. You were racing in Lausanne. I think it was Lausanne. And basically it was, that's a lot of pressure. Basically it was, if I do well, I can continue to be a hopefully professional triathlete. If I don't, I'm going to university.
Yeah,
that's a lot of, that's sort of like the ultimate, right?
Well,
and you won.
Yeah, 1998. I didn't like being the bridesmaid at the European champs, and I realized you know, being a world champion was going to give me that step up in needs and to go forward as a professional and put me in line for a possible Olympic place for Great Britain at the Sydney Olympics. And yeah, I mean, live by the sword, die by the sword. I still stand by that.
Well, and what I love is when you look back at your career, the fact that you were in that first ever Olympic triathlon, how special was Sydney?
I mean, it still gives me goosebumps thinking about it. You know, I was on the start line, myself and Ivan Rana were 22, the youngest guys on the field. You know, to look behind us and see the Opera House, the bridge. Australia is such an iconic triathlon country.
The perfect place for us to have the first ever Olympic.
It really is. And it was one of the greatest memories I've got of not just triathlon, but of sport. We were on the second day. Michele had won silver the day before. It was just an amazing, as a 22-year-old, I'd recommend going to the Olympic Games. I really would.
And the crowds, when I talked to people who raced that day, they were louder. They said their ears were still ringing after race.
You know, I was running with Robbo, Peter Robinson, one of the 3-time world champion Australian, and I thought, I either need to drop him or he needs to drop me, because the crowd on the run was just deafening. It was to the point where it was uncomfortable.
Loud.
But looking back on that, it's like, I'm so glad I've experienced that. You know, it's, no one can take that away from me. It's awesome.
Really. I mean, you look at your career, 3-time Olympian, and last year with your 7:40:23 at Ironman Brazil, you've had a lot of great days in sport. Was that just one of those days?
Absolutely. I mean, you live for those days. You train for them. Never a perfect day, if I'm honest, but you know, you want to get as close to that as possible. And every couple of years, you know, things line up and you have amazing days. And yeah, I've been lucky enough, I guess. They say the harder you train, the luckier you get, that on you know, those days line up more and more with the major championships. And yeah, yeah.
Is the goal to get back to Kona?
Absolutely, 100% get back to Kona 2018.
This year?
Absolutely.
And what are the plans here for Boston?
I'm not sure. I've never run a marathon.
I was going to say, you've never run a straight marathon, right?
I've done one on a treadmill once in Vegas for Polar in
right.
the CES
yes,
show, but
yeah.
never a standalone. I'm hoping, I mean, we talked about the crowd at Sydney. I'm hoping that I'm used to running on my own with a lead motorbike or someone telling me, Jan's a couple of minutes ahead, but hopefully here, from what I hear, from what you said last year, the crowd is phenomenal.
You'll love it.
So, and I'm going to have a sea of people in front, a sea of people behind. So if I can run 2:02, I'll be happy. I mean, sorry, if I can run...
break the marathon world record after the world record.
Well, whatever. Not? You know, I'm fresh. No, if I can run a 2:50 to 2:59.59, I'll be over the moon.
That would be amazing after what you've been through from October to now. If you could finish thing for one. But if you run like 3 hours-ish, that would be unbelievable.
Yeah, but let's do it. I believe I can do it. And I've done two long runs of 17 miles, so.
You're ready.
Done 5 weeks of running, so hopefully I'm ready, yeah.
Tim, on behalf of the world of triathlon, having you back healthy after something scary like that, because it could have gone the other way. You could be paralyzed. And the great thing is that you've got a great year in front of you and you've got a number of great years left.
Hopefully, yeah. And like, as I say, I'm going to take each day, each training week, each race as it comes, and yeah, just go out there and give it 110%.
Love it. How about a round of applause for Mr. Tim Don? This again is Breakfast with Bob, Boston Marathon Edition, presented and hosted by Highland Stop Your Cramp, Not Your Race, and by Polar Chase Your Destiny. One more round of applause for the legend, Mr. Tim Don. Hold on, everybody. We will be right back.